I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Live. Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Here we go. Welcome in. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, a Wednesday evening edition of the show. My name's Matt Pauly. We've got you till 8 o'clock this evening. We got a lot to get into. Very, very busy program coming up today. It's a Wednesday, so that means our weekly conversation with Bernie Miklas is going to be coming up in about 5 minutes or so. Later on this hour, looking forward to this. Not exactly a common occurrence here at KMOX. We're going to talk Eastern Illinois University baseball. And you go, Matt, why are you talking about Eastern Illinois University baseball? With all due respect to all the wonderful people, about two and a half hours from here in Charleston, Illinois. Well, in the World Series earlier this week, there was the epic 18-inning game. And if you were watching that game, a guy that you were likely to have never heard of came in to pitch the end of the game, the final few innings, and that was a guy by the name of Will Klein. Wasn't even on the postseason roster for the Dodgers previously. Had been working out in Arizona on his own up until the World Series and then added to the roster. Well, if you didn't know, Will Klein, previously, he played his collegiate baseball, again, just a little bit more than 2 hours away from St. Louis, at Eastern Illinois University. And their head coach, Jason Anderson, who is a former big leaguer himself, having spent a handful of years getting time in the big leagues with a number of different organizations, Jason Anderson, the head coach of Eastern Illinois baseball, is going to join us at about 6:35. Next hour, we are going to hear a little bit from Blues coach Jim Montgomery. He spoke earlier today, leading into tomorrow's game that they have and coming off a loss yesterday. Blues are just a mess. Blues are just an absolute mess. They lose to the Red Wings yesterday by a 5-2 score. The news of the day from the Blues, and this is exciting, so we'll see if this gives them some extra pep in their step, but they do announce today that Dalibor Dvorsky has been called up from their AHL affiliate Springfield, and he's going to be playing tomorrow. Jim Montgomery said that he's going to be on the power play tomorrow. So we'll hear a little bit from Jim Montgomery and also the weekly conversation that we get with Patrick Mahomes from our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. That's going to be coming up in the 7 o'clock hour as well. As always, if you want to join us, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. And for those of you who are following along on our video stream, you can leave a comment on the chat, and we'll try to address some of those as we do go along through the program this evening. Did want to start with the Blues, and we'll talk with Bernie Miklas about this a little bit more in just a bit. Like, I don't know when you really start to throw up the red flags. Maybe some people already have. It's really bad right now. I'm not trying to, run these guys over with a bus, right? Like, it's really bad. They're giving up a ton of goals. Defensively, it's terrible. And it's, Montgomery said today that the path to getting kind of back on track, it's not actually that long, that it can happen pretty quickly. Good, because it needs to, but we need to see this happen. And the five-game losing streak actually is something that hasn't happened in about 2.5 years, I believe it is. The fact that they're just giving, it's not just losing the games, it's how they're losing the games. what did I say earlier? 37 goals and their 37 goals and their 5 regulation losses this year. They've lost every single one of their every single game that they've lost in regulation. They've lost by at least 3 goals. It is just flat out ugly right now. And this is a good team. This is a very good team. It's a very good team in a conference and in a division that has great teams. So even being a very good team, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a top of the division, top of conference team. They're probably not. But at the same time, this is a team where the expectations coming into the season that they would absolutely be a playoff club, and they look anything like that. Still very, very early. But you also don't want to be in such a hole that you have a hard time building yourself out of it. And I don't think we're at that point now. They've played 10 games. They've played 10 of 82. And I think it was Braden Shin who spoke about this last night in the locker room, if I remember correctly. If it wasn't him, somebody said it, that you know they can, yeah, they're on a 5-game losing streak right now, but they could just as easily go on a 5-game winning streak. Okay, that's true. And I think this team does have the talent to do that. But they have to shore themselves up defensively. You can't be giving up 7, 6, 6, and 5 goals over a 4-game run. You just can't. And they got to figure it out defensively. And you figure it out defensively. We'll hear from Jim Montgomery next hour. I'm not just trying to parrot everything that he said earlier today, but I thought it was interesting. He discussed where they're at from an offensive standpoint, some of the advanced numbers that go along with who they are offensively when it comes to, you know, the chances that they're getting and things like that. They're basically right where they want to be offensively, even if it's not totally resulting in goals, that will come. The process, what they're trying to do, is for the most part being accomplished, but they are just an absolute mess defensively. And they got to find themselves a way to work themselves out of it. And I don't totally know what that looks like, but I hope it happens, and I hope it happens soon, because I was looking forward to a good Blues season and a season that would result in them in the playoffs, and obviously that's still very much on the table, but they can't keep doing this for a while, especially in the division and the conference that they're in. Again, we've got a lot coming up this hour. We are going to hear from Bernie Miklas in just a moment. By the way, a little bit of breaking news. The Minnesota Twins hiring Derek Shelton, the former Pirates manager. He's going to become their new manager. I'll be interested to see what that looks like. And also, it was reported that as Albert Pujols, who continues to discuss things with the San Diego Padres, he's actually on the MLB Network broadcast of the World Series pregame right now. He was in Southern California. He reportedly met with the Padres for 9.5 hours in his second interview. That's what Bob Nightingale said. 9.5 hours Pujols met with the Padres. I don't know if that means he's any closer to getting that job or not, but certainly something to keep an eye on. We'll take a break. When we come back, Bernie Miklas is going to join us. Don't go anywhere. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We do continue on here on a Wednesday night. We have reached that time where we talk with Bernie Miklas every week. Of course, he is part of the team here at KMOX. You hear him during sports on a Sunday morning, during Dave Glover, Chris and Amy, his weekly conversation here, Rush Hour Sports. He's all over the place. Also, he does daily written and video content over at STL Sports Central. Follow him on Twitter at @B_Miklas. He's Bernie Miklas. How are you doing, Bernie?
I'm doing good, my friend Matt Pauley. Thank you. How you?
I am good. I wasn't going to talk to you about this. This wasn't on my schedule of things to get to, but I just saw you tweet this literally in the last couple minutes. The Augie Nash Twitter account, which is a great account that goes through St. Louis Cardinals history, tweeted something out about Bob Bregg, who obviously at the Post-Dispatch also had a presence here on KMOX. And you quote tweeted it and talked a little bit about your development as a young sports writer and how Bob Bregg was such a big part of that. Can you expound on that a little bit here?
He was incredibly kind and supportive of me. I came to St. Louis in 1985 and I started writing the column in 1989, and I was very young as a columnist. And you know, there are many times in the newspaper business, as it was, not now, but as it was, where sort of the senior columnist who's still working will, you know, not be the nicest to the young puppy columnist, kind of resents the young guy, doesn't offer much help, that kind of thing. I know a lot of people that had to go through stuff like that, but Bob Bragg was, he looked out for me. He was incredibly kind and helpful, and he introduced me to people. We had lunch once a week. I got to know a lot of people in St. Louis that I never would have gotten to know without him. And I just, he had a tremendous impact on me, and I really, really miss him. And I said in the tweet, you know, one of my favorite memories of Bob Bragg was driving him to and from Mizzou football home games. We could have, I mean, we, you know, he is a living history museum, and all the stories he would have about those great Cardinals teams, you know, going way back. I mean, way, way back. And he's telling me Stan the Man stories and, you know, Enos Slaughter story. So it would be like I would even drive slow to get to the stadium. I would drive slow because I wanted to listen to his stories and ask him questions. And then coming back, I would drive, coming home to St. Louis, I would drive him even more slowly because I wanted to have those conversations and soak up all that I could. He was what a legend in St. Louis. What an icon. And, you know, it's strange. He's one of those guys I thought would live to be about 100, you know? So to me, he left too soon. I love that man.
Yeah. So this kind of a weird left turn I'm going to take in connecting all of this, but John O'Leary was here at the KMOX studios a little bit more than a week ago, and he was here. He talked to the KMOX staff, and one of the things he brought up was how cool it was at KMOX that you can go in terms of KMOX sports director, because that's Tom Ackerman right now. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go. It's not like a million people have been in that position as you dated back to Jack Buck. Essentially, it's been two people since Jack Buck, and there's a line to that. And I think there's been so many columnists, there's been so many newspaper people, there've been so many team broadcasters that have had such longevity in this market that not only is it cool for those individuals, but like we don't have to trace back that many generations back to get to the great Bob Bragg. You know, that's what I'm trying to get to here. You have these stories about him, and then people have stories about Bernie. Like, it's a very cool part of St. Louis media.
I think it is, and I think in a way that's been lost a little bit in you know, other markets because media has changed so much. And I actually, not that I want to be 66 years old. I'd like to be, say, 46. But I'm also grateful to be 66 and having all this history inside me, all this institutional knowledge passed down by people like not only Bob Bragg, but the bench warmer, Bob Burns, who was also very kind to me, and other legends, Rick Hummel. You know, I'm able to walk around with the stories they told me and the experiences I had with them and because of them. And in my own way, I try to tell these stories and keep their memories alive, but also it's always important to remember the people that came before you who had a great impact, not only on me, but more than me, a great impact on generations of St. Louisans.
Yeah. I'm glad you quoted that. I'm glad we had this conversation. In many ways, the Post-Dispatch and KMOX are intertwined in a lot of things. And I don't know if my dad actually was the producer of this show in the 60s. So I grew up on just learning the history of this. And it's, I don't know, it's something that, especially with the KMOX 100-year anniversary and everything that's coming up, more of this is going to be out there. And it's really good. It's good to be able to talk about these titans that came before us, and especially for somebody like me that's a little bit younger than you.
Hey, listen. And I mean this 100% with affection, okay? This is not me poking fun at the bench warmer, Bob Burns, who was incredible to me as well. But you ain't, listen, I'm telling you, Mr. Matt Pauley, you haven't done talk radio until you're in the KMOX studio, the old KMOX studios, and you're asked to sit in with Bob Burns. And in the middle of a sentence, Bob Burns, first of all, has got a cigar going, right, in the studio. and then in the middle of the segment, he's talking and he closes his eyes. And I'm thinking, well, he's trying to think of what he wants to say next. He wants to be careful. But then I realize he actually kind of dozed off and he's got the cigar lit and everything else. And again, I'm not making fun of him. I'm just telling you where can you go to see stuff like that? A legend like that. I mean, you know, where you're just like, seeing stuff you thought you'd never see. And God bless him. And I would just kind of nudge him softly, you know, and he'd get right back into it like he had never dozed off for a few seconds. Oh, my goodness.
I worked with a guy. So when I was in Milwaukee, I worked with a former big leaguer, Davey Nelson. I don't know if you remember Davey.
Oh, yeah, okay. I sure do. Yeah.
So I worked with Davey Nelson, and he has since passed away. He's one of my favorite people that I've ever been around. He would doze off at any given moment, and you know maybe you kind of like start to speak a little bit louder just to try to, you know, get them out of their day. Maybe I just wasn't very entertaining, but yeah, it is funny when you've got that situation when you're literally talking with somebody who is falling asleep as you're speaking.
You know, and Bob Bragg, you know, 20 million stories, but maybe my favorite one was, you know, it's 1967. And it's game 7 of the World Series against the Red Sox. Bob Gibson starting. And what happened was Bob Gibson slept in slept longer than he usually does. It's a Sunday morning, I believe. And so he missed breakfast, like the coffee shop closed or something. And he's on the bus, and Bragg's on the bus. And Gibson's talking about how he's hungry, wish he had something to eat. You know, he needs to eat something to pitch. So Bragg like literally jumps off the bus, and he's running down the street, and he finds like a, I don't know, just a typical diner type place right in Boston. And he orders Gibby kind of like two ham, egg and cheese sandwiches, right? There might have even been three. And then he gets in a cab and he gets to Fenway Park and he delivers the sandwiches to Gibson, who's, you know, was not the warmest guy at times, but he just kind of smiled at Bragg and said, well, that was very kind of you, Bob. And then, of course, Gibson goes out and pitches a masterpiece and he hits a home run. So, and then Bragg, God bless him, would always kind of in a way to take a little credit for that. You know, oh my gosh.
Oh.
Stories.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Yep. Before we let you go, I know you did a video on the Blues. Man, oh man, oh man. Five straight losses. They've given up, Bernie, 37 goals in their six regulation losses this year. Every single one of their regulation losses has been by at least three goals. It is, it's early. There's still plenty of time. This is not an indictment on this team for the full season, but holy moly, is this not a good performance from this team right now?
No, you know, Jeremy Rutherford, our good friend from The Athletic, he wrote a great piece today. And, you know, he basically said, I mean, his lead was like the St. Louis Blues are broken. And that's just that kind of sums it all up, because there's really nothing about the team right now that's working or functioning well. Like everything about the team is busted. And that part makes it more serious to me, because I'm usually the first guy to like, well, it's 82 game season. They have 72 to go. Everybody relax. It'll be okay. Well, when a team is this broken and no one down there has any answers, Jim Montgomery's exasperated. He's tried to encourage them. He's tried to demand things. He's held them accountable. He's pointed out, you know, what they need to do. And he doesn't have an answer. And, you know, I thought Cam Fowler last night, when he was asked question by reporters after that awful loss last night, you know, it said, well, you know, what's the problem? What do you identify? Like, why is this happening? And he said, honestly, I don't have an answer. And I'm thinking, well, the coach doesn't have an answer. The players don't have an answer. I mean, it's broken. You know, it's just a matter of how long it's going to take them to fix it. It's very unusual to see them this bad. And I don't think it's just a little phase. I don't.
All right, we'll see how it goes. Bernie, I really enjoyed this. I'm glad you tweeted that. That was a lot of fun, so thank you for sharing the story. We should do stuff like that more often.
Oh, absolutely, because that's the thing. I'm the old guy now, right?
I mean, I'm not going to call you the old guy, but if you want to self-identify, I'm not going to push back.
I'm the old guy. Okay. I'm the one with the memories and stories. Anyway, you, man. Thank you.
Well, before we let you go, can you share with us a little bit about Saliga?
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Live. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. If you've been paying attention to the World Series, a very cool moment in that crazy 18-inning game the other day. The game was finished out by Dodgers pitcher Will Klein. Now, if you did not know, Klein actually played his college baseball only about 2 hours away from St. Louis at Eastern Illinois, and he played for Coach Jason Anderson, a former big leaguer himself. And Coach Anderson joins us right now. Coach, thanks for taking some time with us. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Big win the other night, and appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, let's start with this. Did you make it all 18 innings? Were you locked in when Will came in?
No. I think I fell asleep about the 12th inning, and I was watching the game with my 14-year-old son, and he stayed up, and he actually let me sleep through Will's first inning, and then he woke me up in the second inning, and pretty locked in after that.
What is it for you? I have to say, man, I know you were a big leaguer yourself, but watching guys that you coached in college to have that kind of moment and that kind of impact, what did that mean to you?
Oh, man, it's just great, man. It's exciting for Will, obviously, but also his family. Like, he has put in a ton of work and made improvements to his game, and you know, nobody ever thinks they're going to end up being a World Series hero, but, you know, when the moment arises, you know, the question is, are you ready for it? And he was ready for it. It was really neat to see.
So, I mean, you look at his college numbers, they were somewhat pedestrian. I know you don't always you can't project a guy as a big leaguer. Did you see something when he was playing for you? Did you have a thought that this guy had an opportunity to get into pro baseball and to work up the ranks and eventually get to the big leagues?
Well, when we brought him in, I mean, he was in high school. He was a high school catcher, so very limited pitching experience. And so his freshman year, we really worked on, you know, just turning him into a pitcher. Didn't really have a whole lot of off speed, didn't have a whole lot of command, which led into sophomore year where he got a little bit better, but still a little erratic. But his junior year, he was electric. He was, you know, high 90s and dotting fastballs on the quarter and plus breaking balls. The problem was it just happened to coincide with the COVID year. And so we only really got to see him for four starts. And, you know, that was just another obstacle he had to overcome on his end.
What did you see from him? That's an interesting story. The fact that he was a catcher coming out of high school. Did everybody know he was going to be a pitcher at the next level? Or was it something that you and maybe your staff specifically saw?
Well, I don't know what anybody else saw, but, I mean, he's a Bloomington, Indiana kid, you know, right there where Indiana University is. But, you know, I saw him. He had great size. He had a good arm. He was high 80s or, you know, low 90s, fresh arm. But what I really liked about him was his school mentality. I mean, he was a 34 ACT, and that told me that he was really going to be able to work. And, you know, if he put the same effort in the classroom as he did on the field, we were going to be able to develop him. And we did the visit, and, you know, the combination of talking to him and meeting his family and to seeing his support staff, it was easy. Like, it was a good fit, and we were excited to bring him in.
We're talking to the head coach of Eastern Illinois baseball, and that is Jason Anderson. He was Will Klein's coach when Will was playing college baseball, again, just a couple hours away from here in St. Louis. What does it do for your program? And, you know, bluntly, we would not be having you on. Eastern Illinois baseball is not something we'd be talking about here on KMOX if not for this moment. Over these last couple days, what has it done? Because it has put a bit of a spotlight on your program.
Yeah, well, I mean, for him, he's one of the guys that helped turn our program around. I mean, we've had a lot of success over here. We put three guys in the big league last year. We had Trey Sweeney, who was a first round pick. Hayden Birdsong was in the rotation with the Giants at 23 years old. And then you got Will throwing over 100 miles an hour. But we also got Ryan Ignafo in Double A. We won championship rings two out of the last 3 years. We won academic awards. And so, you know, this stuff all stemmed from guys like him that, you know, we talk about winning everything around here, the classroom, the weight room, on the field. And, you know, he's all of those things. And so that's what he really means to us. And he's opened the door to really show other guys that, hey, this is really possible.
The Eastern Illinois, from an athletic standpoint, it gets talked about a lot with football because there's been a number of individuals connected to Eastern Illinois that have gone on to do really good things in the NFL. It's beyond baseball, beyond football. I mean, this is just an athletic department that certainly probably has punched above its weight in terms of producing high-end players, high-end coaches, things like that.
Yeah, you know, and that's what I like. You know, our program, when I recruit guys, I tell them, like, I want to do things that people don't think we can do. Like, I don't want to be at the program that just goes and buys players that other guys have developed. I want guys that have a chip on their shoulder that have been overlooked and come in here, and then we'll go compete against those guys, and we've beaten them. You know, we've beaten the big schools, and, you know, we're not afraid of them. And it's a mentality that works well when these guys do get into Pro Bowl. And, you know, to go in the 15th inning of a World Series game, like, you better have that mentality. And, you know, some of these kids that are going to these bigger schools don't have that mentality.
It's a really cool story. Since we have you, and I know you have one, I was looking at your roster. I saw there was one kid from the St. Louis area. It's Charleston, Illinois, less than 2.5 hours away from St. Louis. How important is the St. Louis area for what you're trying to do and the recruiting that you do for your team?
Yeah, we've got, you know, most of our guys are from St. Louis, Chicago, Indianapolis area. But we got guys from all over the world. We've had Canadians, Australians. Had a kid from the Bronx last year, South Dakota, California. I'm looking under every rock trying to find guys that have that mentality that, you know, want to do those things. And, you know, but St. Louis has been huge for us. It's the baseball down there is awesome. And so we've had a good number of guys that have came up here that, you know, that have had success.
Well, there's been a lot of focus here on Eastern Illinois baseball the last couple of days. Jason Anderson, the head coach, former big leaguer himself, but he got to watch one of his players, as he mentioned a moment ago, a number of his players play in the big leagues, but it was a really cool moment watching Will Klein in the extra inning game. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing your experience and what it was like for you watching Klein pitch the other day. Really, really cool stuff.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Jason Anderson, again, the head baseball coach at Eastern Illinois. It's funny, you never know. All of a sudden, a guy that you really haven't heard much about, like a Will Klein, he walks into to a game, has a huge impact, wins a game from the mound, and just does things that nobody really expected out of him, somebody who wasn't even on the roster earlier on in the postseason for the Dodgers. And then you find out the backstory, and lo and behold, this is a guy who was pitching his college ball about 2 hours from St. Louis, and a great opportunity to talk with Coach Jason Anderson about that experience. We will take a break. We've got more coming up. Don't go anywhere. You are locked in to a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we get into our final segment here in hour number one. Hour number two, we've got a lot coming up. We are going to hear from Blues coach Jim Montgomery. He spent some time meeting with the media after practice earlier today. Had some really interesting things to say. Talked a lot about Dalibor Dvorsky, who is now with the team. Will play tomorrow night. Will be a center. Will be on the power play tomorrow. But also, how does this team get better? That was a big part of what was talked about today. So you'll hear from Jim Montgomery in just a while. I got some feedback on something that I said, and I'll be honest with you. If we talk Cardinals, if we talk baseball, there's never an issue with getting feedback. When we talk about the Blues, we don't get as much feedback, and I don't totally know why that is. I'm not going to not talk Blues about it. We talk a lot of Blues hockey on this show, as we should. And I made the comment earlier that the Blues are a good, not great team. Maybe I said a very good team, not great. I don't know if I said good or very good, but I did put the qualifier not great. And what I meant by that is I think they're a team that should be in the postseason this year. I think they're good enough to be in the postseason, but I don't think they're the class of the division. I know they're not the class of the division. I know they're not the class of the, you know, of the West overall, right? So good, not great. That's how I would describe them. Got a fair amount of feedback on that. And just a couple examples of that. Larry sent in a message on the video stream, said it is not a very good team. Got a more elaborate text that came in that says, let's see, we'll make sure I get this right. It says, how can you say Fields a good hockey team? He says, if you truly take the St. Louis hat off, can you really feel that way? Says, I have to imagine an evening sports show in any other market is going to look at the Blues and say, and not say, that's a really good team. I know it has to be hard to be in the market and trash on them, but a supposed good team in our hearts and on paper is not the same as what's on the ice. Try to remove the bias. And I appreciated that message. And I guess this is where I would go from that. When I talk about, and at some point in the year, this changes, right? We're still early on in the year. If they continue to play the way they are playing right now, well, 2 months from now, I'm not going to tell you they're a good team. Because at that point, there's going to be enough evidence on the ice that that's not the case. I look at who they should be. I look at who they could be, but more about who they should be. Should and could are different. They rhyme, but they're not the same. Who they should be. Who should the Blues be? I think we saw down the stretch of the year last year a pretty darn good team, and I think they got better in the offseason. Now, Jim Montgomery climbed to the mountaintop and screamed as loud as he could during training camp that this is a brand new year. This is not just a continuation of last season. And I think a lot of us, including myself, I'll raise my hand, a lot of us just kind of looked at, okay, this is almost going to be a continuation of last season. And Jim Montgomery tried to tell us, no, that's not the case. That's not the case. This is a brand new team, and you can't build upon expectations from last year to this year. Maybe build upon expectations is the wrong way to say it. But you understand. I think you should understand where I'm going at with this. For me, it's early enough to say that I don't think the team that we're seeing on the ice right now is who they are. I think they're better than that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the people who are pushing back on me right now are going to be correct. And if that's right, well, we're going to have plenty of time to revisit this for sure. And if the Blues don't turn things around, if the Blues continue to struggle at this rate, if they're not a playoff team this year, well, then we can sit here and maybe I'll change my tune to all of a sudden I'll be saying, well, the Blues just aren't a very good team. I did that with the Cardinals. And I'm not afraid of changing opinions, and I don't think it's talking out both sides of my mouth. I'm a real big believer in this. I believe what I believe, and I believe what I believe for reasons. But when given new information, I am the first to reevaluate things and look at things differently. I think from a self-awareness standpoint, I actually think that's one of my strengths. I tend not to dig in on positions. When something presents itself, when there is new information out there, I have no problem changing my opinion based off that. And the Cardinals went from a team that in May I was really excited about, and the way they were playing, I thought that maybe that was something that was going to be real. Maybe that was something that was going to be legitimate. And by the time the season got done, I think we could all sit back and say, you know what? They just weren't a very good team. They just didn't have enough talent. They played over their skis in the month of May, and some people, including myself, probably got caught up in it a little bit. And at the end of the day, they just weren't the best team. Maybe that's going to happen in kind of reverse order here with the Blues maybe moving forward, right? And I hope not. I hope not. I hope that they turn around, and I hope that they're a good that the play on the ice matches my expectations for them. So when I sit here and say they're a good team, it's not me talking about who they are right now with a 3-6-1 record. It's about the talent that has been assembled. It's about the coach they have. It's about the things that they can be, and it's still early enough in the season that I feel like they can reach that. One final thing before we get out of here for hour number one. This is hockey related. I wanted to share this story because I think it's really cool. This was written by, it's from The Athletic. Let's see. James Myrtle wrote it. I believe that's how you say his name. Brad Marchand of the Florida Panthers. I don't know if you've heard this story. It's pretty darn cool. He is actually stepping away from the Florida Panthers for a single night. He had a friend in his hometown of Halifax, and his friend, a local coach and a trainer in Halifax, J.P. McCollum. J.P. recently lost his 10-year-old daughter after a battle with cancer. Just a terrible, terrible story. So Brad Marchand is stepping away from the Florida Panthers. And one of the cool when you hear about Marchand, you think about like super tough guy, right? Like he's got he has a reputation as a player, a certain reputation. Well, this shows you that who the guys are on the ice sometimes is not exactly who they are in real life, for lack of a better term. And that's not true just about hockey. That's true about everything. So Marchand's going to be coaching in place of this individual, McCollum, when the Nova Scotia under-18 hockey Halifax team play in a game that's going to be coming up again. I believe that's going on tonight. And this game is going to be used as an opportunity to honor the memory of that man's daughter, raise funds for the family as well, as evidently they do need a little bit of help in that area. And Marchand has donated a signed jersey for an online raffle. But really, really a cool thing right there that Brad Marchand's leaving the Florida Panthers for a night, has a close relationship with this individual, and he's gonna step aside from the Florida Panthers and go coach this team in honor of a friend. So I saw that today. I thought it was really, really cool. And one of those stories that I'm glad The Athletic wrote about, and I'm glad it got out there a little bit because we don't always hear those type of stories, and I just thought it was certainly something that absolutely was worth mentioning. Blues are going to get back at tomorrow night. Again, coming up in hour number two, we are going to hear a little bit from Jim Montgomery. He had a lot to say today. I've gone through some of it, but we're going to listen into him of all of his non-game media conferences that he's had this year. I thought today was... for me personally, it was kind of the most enlightening. He said a lot of things about a lot of different things, and certainly want to play that for you. And then also in hour number two, we are going to hear from Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, his weekly conversation that he does with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. We like to replay that for you each and every week, and we're going to do that for you after the Chiefs came away with a good victory. Also in the 7 o'clock hour, something crazy is happening. I've talked about this way too much lately. This just shouldn't be something that we're talking about on an everyday basis. But the college football, the way things are going right now in college football with the coaches, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy with what's happened with the coaching carousel. And there were some comments made today by the governor of Louisiana, of all things, about the head coaching position at LSU and who's actually going to be hiring that position. And if we were to like take the same situation and apply it to Missouri, it would be a really weird thing. So we'll get into that coming up as well here in just a little while. As always, if you want to join us, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me as well, at Matt Pauly on air. You are locked in to a Graybar Sports Open line right here on KMOX.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Always helps turn the mic on into our second hour. It is Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. As always, if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting. If you call or text, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. And you can leave a comment on the video chat as well if you happen to be watching us on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. The news of the day from a baseball standpoint, Derek Shelton has been hired as the Minnesota Twins manager, the former Pirates manager. I just saw something that Jeff Jones tweeted out a little while ago. He had tweeted out that if Shelton had not gotten a managerial job this year, that he could have seen a scenario where Shelton ended up working in St. Louis in some form or fashion, has ties here, knows Chaim Bloom evidently well. He and Oliver Marmol evidently are friends based off what Jeff said. So I guess in a roundabout way, there might have been a St. Louis impact. I'm going to be curious with Shelton, because one of the things I always like to see is when managers are in places. Okay, let's do the Skip Schumacher thing. And it's not a total perfect analogy, because Schumacher did have some success with the Miami Marlins, more success in one of his years in Miami than Shelton ever had with the Pirates. But it's one of those places where you're not expected to win, right? You're not given the resources to win in a Pittsburgh, in a Miami. And both those managers were considered to have done a very good job with what they had to work with. I do think it was time for Pittsburgh to make a change. Like that, for the lack of success that they had under Derek Shelton and him being there so long, at some point they needed a new voice. They got a new voice. I think Kelly did a nice job there, and he got the full-time job following the season coming to an end. But I'm always curious to see what it looks like when a guy who is considered to have done a good job at a place where it's hard slash impossible to win, what it looks like when they go somewhere else. And generally, that exact description would apply to Derek Shelton. Well, here's the problem. He's going somewhere in Minnesota that gives you a little bit more of a chance to win than what you have in Pittsburgh, but not a great chance to win. That's a team that a couple of years ago is in the postseason, and then they go into the offseason just looking to slash payroll. That's not a great situation. So I don't know how much better it's going to be for him. And then the other Major League Baseball managerial news coming out today is that Albert Pujols had a count 'em 9.5-hour meeting with the San Diego Padres. What? I would love to have been a fly in the wall on that one. 9.5. You're talking about a lot for 9.5 hours. If you're Albert Pujols and you don't get that job, it's like I had two interviews and the second interview was 9.5 hours. That could have been an email if you were not going to hire. That's a long, long interview. He was going to be in Southern California anyways. He is on coverage for MLB Network. He's been doing pregame stuff for the World Series tonight. But yeah, 9.5-hour meeting, according to multiple reports. That's sort of the news of the day. Derek Shelton, former Pirates manager, taking over in Minnesota. And man, you would think that after a 9.5-hour meeting, yeah, at some point in time during that 9.5 hours, AJ Preller or somebody else was thinking of themselves, you know what? Pujols just isn't the guy. They could have gone ahead and just ended it right there. The old whelp, and started to stand up like the Midwest goodbye. They could have done that. They could have given the whelp. There was no whelp given, evidently, or it came 9.5 hours into the meeting. So I saw this just a few moments ago. This is what we want to talk about. This is crazy, and maybe it's not crazy when you think about it in terms of the state of Louisiana. I'm not trying to take a shot at the state of Louisiana, but it's It's a unique state, and they do things their own way. If you haven't heard, there's a college football coaching vacancy in the state of Louisiana that's kind of a big deal after LSU fired Brian Kelly. So the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, and let me be very honest here before we go any further. I don't know a whole lot about Jeff Landry. I don't know a whole lot about the political situation in the state of Louisiana. I assume it is I know it is a right-leaning state. But beyond that, the exact details of it, I don't know a whole lot about it. But this is what happened today. So Jeff Landry is the governor of Louisiana. He was doing a media conference, and it was connected to everything that's going on right now with the government shutdown and state-funded assistance going away and all that sort of stuff. Somebody asked him about his role in the firing of Brian Kelly, and he did have a role. That's been well reported that as LSU and everybody was going through the process, because there's a lot of money that's going to be owed, that is owed to Brian Kelly, that the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, was in on the conversation. So Landry was asked about who's going to make the hire on the next head coach. And the athletic director at LSU is Scott Woodward. And generally, an athletic director is the primary decision maker when it comes to bringing in a new football coach. Sometimes the university president will be involved in that. Like if Eli Drinkwitz is to leave Missouri this year, Laird Veach will, the Mizzou athletic director, will be involved in that. But the administration at Mizzou, I'm sure they will have a voice as well. It's not a singular decision being made by an athletic director, but the athletic director has probably the largest voice in much of that conversation. So Landry was asked about LSU athletic director Scott Woodward and what role the AD at LSU is going to have in hiring the next football coach. This is real. I read this, and it almost seems like it's something that should come from the Babylon Bee or something. The governor of Louisiana, when speaking about LSU athletic director Scott Woodward, said this. This is a quote. "I can tell you right now, Scott Woodward is not selecting the next coach. Hell, I'd let Donald Trump select the next coach before I'd let him do it." That would be like Mike Kehoe being asked about if Eli Drinkwitz were to leave Missouri. And for some reason, somebody's talking to Governor Kehoe about it. That would be like Kehoe saying, "I could tell you right now, Laird Veach is not selecting the next coach. Hell, I'd let Donald Trump select it before I let him do it." This is real life. If I'm Woodward, I don't want that job anymore. And I know that's really easy for a guy hosting a sports radio show in St. Louis, Missouri, to say, and there's not a whole lot of Power 4 athletic director jobs available. But if I'm taking strays from the governor and the governor is telling me that I cannot do my job, that's an issue. I guess Landry also, this press conference that, again, was supposed to be about SNAP benefits and government shutdown and all that sort of stuff, it just absolutely devolved into a football conversation. So that's all the governor really wanted to talk about, evidently, today in Louisiana. Said, quote, we're not going down a failed path. This is a pattern that got us here. The guy talking about Woodward that wrote that contract cost Texas A&M $77 million. Right now, we've got a $53 million liability. We're not doing that again. What that was in reference to is Woodward was the AD at Texas A&M who signed Jimbo Fisher to a 10-year $75 million contract in 2017. However, that contract was then extended by his successor at Texas A&M. That should be clear. That turned into a 10-year, $95 million contract. And then Fisher was fired in 2023 and had 77 fully guaranteed million dollars left on his contract at that point in time. But this is just wild. This is wild that this has happened, that the governor of Louisiana is talking this way about an athletic director at a university. And I am speaking here on this topic, admittedly, with a lack of depth of real information on it. Like, I don't know the dynamic between the governor and the university and all of that. I don't. And maybe I should learn a little bit more about that before talking about it. But I just saw this just moments ago, and I could not believe when I see the governor of Louisiana talking that way. But, you know, in most states, especially in most SEC states, the highest paid government employee ends up being the football coach. And that's football runs so much. Like, football is overly important. And I'm not saying it's not important. It's just, we're at a place right now, we're seeing sports and politics, and this is not a political show. I'm not trying to go down that path right now. But we see sports and politics colliding more and more and more and more. Like the other day, there was a fake tweet that was sent out, the social media platform that Trump's on? I don't even know what it's called. The one that he created. Somebody had created basically a fake social media post from him, where it said that he was not going to invite the Dodgers or the Blue Jays to the White House, no matter who ended up winning. It was totally fake. It wasn't true. He didn't say that. But it was believable, right? Like, you see that, and it's believable. And more we're seeing the intersection of sports and politics. And these coaching searches go along with it. Because when you've got a government employee that you've got to pay $50 million for them to go away, that has to be something that crosses the desk of somebody in government at some point in time. And a lot of these coaches, you know, most of these athletic departments now are their own corporations. They're independent totally of the university and the money that's coming in. But it's not, there's still a little bit of a connection in all of that. A quick update, by the way, a wild, wild, wild start to the World Series. It is currently in the top of the first inning, and the Toronto Blue Jays are leading this game by a 2-0 score on back-to-back home runs to start the game. The first batter of the game was Davis Schneider. He hit a home run, and then a moment later, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit a home run against Blake Snell. And it's just not going overly well for Snell here at the moment. They are out of the top of the first inning, but the Blue Jays do lead by a 2-0 score. So if the Blue Jays were to win tonight, that would allow them to take a 3-2 series lead back to Toronto for game 6 and 7 if needed. But they very, very, very good start here for the Toronto Blue Jays against the Dodgers. Coming up in just a moment or so, we are going to hear from Jim Montgomery. He is the Blues coach. He spoke with the media earlier today. I thought he had some really interesting things to say. We'll hear that coming up. And then later on, we are going to hear from Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, the weekly conversation he does with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. That's all coming up here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Welcome back in. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley as we continue to take you until 8 o'clock this evening. While the struggles, they are absolutely continuing for the St. Louis Blues. They have lost 5 straight games. They lose yesterday to the Red Wings by a 5-2 score. They're going to get back at it coming up tomorrow night when they match up against the Vancouver Canucks. Blues head coach Jim Montgomery met with the media today, and the Blues also announced earlier today that they are bringing up forward Dalibor Dvorsky from Springfield. He has played in 6 games for the Thunderbirds this season, leading the team with 3 goals, has 5 points overall, and somebody who certainly has a very, very bright NHL future. So an exciting moment for him, as it looks like he's going to be given a real opportunity here moving forward. We'll see what happens when Robert Thomas is back, but this certainly feels like an opportunity for Dvorsky to get here and make an impact. And when Montgomery spoke with the media today, let's actually start with with Robert Thomas. He gave a bit of an update on him.
Doing better. He's on the mend. Taking the steps to be a player again, but doubtful for tomorrow.
So Thomas not available tomorrow. So when we go to what that means for Dvorsky and what he's going to bring to this team, Montgomery is very excited about what that might look like.
You know, when you first get in the NHL, you realize how grateful you are to be in the NHL. You're in the best league in the world. Everything is the best. The way you get treated, Enterprise Center is full. You're playing in front of electric fans. You're playing against the best players in the world. So the natural energy that a young player brings energy to the group. And then if we're looking specifically at the player, his offensive skill set and his shot that can beat a goalie at any level from distance is something that is always beneficial to have in your lineup. He's playing tomorrow night. And he's going to be on the power play tomorrow night. He's going to be a center.
Montgomery does admit that Thomas's injury does contribute to the motivation to bring up Dvorsky and also to be playing him at center.
Well, it factors into it for sure because, you know, there's an offensive element that we're missing that we usually have that, you know, so he can supply that. Now, it's a complete team effort by all our centers and who ends up low to replace what he does for us offensively and defensively combined. It's not just on the young man.
Centers in the Blues system are asked to do a lot. Sometimes it's a bit more complicated than some other systems out there. And Montgomery did say that as Dvorsky gets here, it might take a little bit of time for him to acclimate to being a center in the system.
Well, you got to get the repetitions, you know, like there's patterns in the game of hockey, even though it's a fluid game, there's patterns that happen. And the more you see the patterns, the more muscle memory and your brain sees it, and the quicker you play. So, you do need the reps, but we also have players, defensemen and other wingers that can help him. You know, he doesn't have to be the low forward every time.
All that being said, a couple very important things when it comes to the Blues right now and getting production and hoping to get some production from Dvorsky. Montgomery says that he really comes in playing very good hockey.
That he's been very effective on the power play and that these last three games have been his best three games that he's played. So he's feeling good about himself. He's making plays. He's scoring goals. He's doing the things, and that's why he's the guy that's called up.
And we can talk all we want about his shot and what he's going to do and limitations and being young and like anything that you want to throw from a negative standpoint. Maybe the biggest positive here is Dvorsky with his shot. He can absolutely score at any level.
It's definitely something that he can provide because that's the strength of his game. If you just look at him offensively, his release, his shot, to be able to beat people with a one-timer or a snapshot is something that's the best part of his offensive game.
A few more things from Jim Montgomery. Again, the Blues losing yesterday, and they've got a record of 3-6-1. I thought this was really good. Of everything he said today, this was most interesting to me. He was asked, you know, sometimes as a team, you might have some bad luck. You might look at your record and say, you know what? We've played better than the record would indicate. Sometimes it works the other way, too. Sometimes you look at your record and you say, we probably don't deserve that record. Well, the Blues, 3-6-1, obviously not very good. Montgomery was asked if he felt like the record represents who they are and the way they've played this year, and I thought his answer was really, really interesting.
I think it's fair. I don't think our process has been good. You know, we're not defending the good ice. We're giving up too many grade A opportunities. We're not giving up a lot, but the ones we give up are like five bell chances, like Albert Pujols is staring at a softball, and he's knocking it out of the park. We got to stop that. The other part is game management. We're not managing games, and it doesn't matter the situation. It could be in the offensive zone. We're not managing the puck well enough. It could be in the neutral zone. You know, our support isn't where it should be. It could be pulled goalie situation. We're trying to make rink-wide passes instead of gaining the red line and rimming it in. Those are game management situations that we have to be more prudent in to give ourselves opportunities, and doesn't matter the situation. The other night in Pittsburgh, we're delayed penalty, 5v6. It looked like we had never played that situation before. You know, those are guys having to take a breath, protect the middle of the ice, and then run your routes properly so that you kill plays and whatever, or make plays.
From an offensive standpoint, the Blues are not scoring enough goals, but that doesn't seem to be the biggest issue on the team. But every night, it feels like there's a goal or two that's left on the table. Sometimes there's some opportunities right in front of the net that they are unable to convert. And Montgomery spent some time talking about what they need to do to be able to start converting those type of goals.
That comes into two areas. Puck from behind the net has been an issue for us, and just having more patience, one guy going, not two, and then the other area is coming in the D zone, stopping in good ice. It's something that we, again, this comes down to coaching, and it comes down to us harping on the details and the players executing it, you know. So those are areas that maybe we haven't done a good enough job harping on. I know we have started harping on it quite a bit, but then you look into the, you know, players wanting to do too much because they want to be difference makers, and they don't stop, they run. And that exposes the good ice. And we just got to trust everybody do their job.
We can talk all we want about what they're doing from an offensive standpoint. The struggles here are coming from a defensive standpoint. As every single regulation loss that they have this year, they have lost by at least three goals. Their last four games, they've given up 5, 6, 6, and 7 goals, respectively. They are just giving up a ton of goals. So it shouldn't surprise you too much when Montgomery says that the team's struggles right now are really based off what they're doing defensively.
I don't think offensively is the issue for us. We're 29th in shots for, but you look at analytics, we're in the top 10 offensively of slot shots and creating high danger chances. So that's not, our focus is on the other area. The other area, we're like 5th in shots against, but yet, like I said, we're not protecting the good ice. So if we protect the good ice and we continue to get the same offense, We're going to win hockey games. We just got to get better without the puck.
So that presents the question. How do you get better defensively? Montgomery's got a lot of confidence that they can get better and they can get back to being the team that they expected to be pretty quickly.
It's something you get back real quick, you know. Now, as a staff, we got to do a better job of hammering on the details of it. Stopping at the house, protecting the good ice, protecting middle ice, protecting the net front. Those are things as a staff we got to help give those players so that they play faster within that structure and have confidence in it.
Good stuff from Blues head coach Jim Montgomery speaking to the media earlier today. Again, the Blues will try to end their 5-game losing streak tomorrow night. They are going to be at home at the Enterprise Center against the Vancouver Canucks. We will take a break. We'll come back and we'll hear from Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, his weekly conversation that he does with our sister station in Kansas City. We'll hear that coming up in just a few moments as we roll on with the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, continuing to take you till 8 o'clock this evening. The Kansas City Chiefs, they got another win this past week. They knocked off the Washington Commanders 28-7. They have now won 3 in a row and 5 of their last 6, and they've got a huge game their next time out as they are going to match up against the Buffalo Bills. That's going to be coming up on Sunday afternoon, 3:25 kickoff. You can hear it right here on KMOX. It is time to listen in to our weekly conversation that Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes has with Carrington Harrison at our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. And as Carrington Harrison opened up the conversation today with Mahomes, as they generally do, they start off with a lighter topic, talking about how the Mahomes family handles trick-or-treaters on Halloween.
Most time we are the trick-or-treating, just with the kids and stuff like that. So while we're doing that, we usually put the bowl of candy out on the front patio or the front porch, whatever you want to call it. And so that's how we usually roll with it. And by the time we get home, it's usually all gone. So I don't know if that's one person taking it all or if that's a lot of people coming by the house.
What kind of candy are you guys divvying out? Are you guys getting like king size candy bars? Are you getting like those little like, you know, variety packs and just, hey, you can grab a handful of it? How are you guys handling giving out the candy?
It's a mixture of both. You know, we do the variety packs, but we also do some of the king size stuff as well. And so I want everybody to have a good time, and I want everybody to get everything they want. So I try to keep it mixing it up every year and as many options as possible.
All right, so I have six candies that I want to go through with you really quickly. I want you to tell me if you would give these candies a thumbs up or a thumbs down and why you feel that way. Let's start with gummy bears. Where are you at?
Yeah, I can do gummy bears. Just depends, you know. But it's not my favorite, but I can do it for sure.
All right, where are you at with a York peppermint patty?
That's a thumbs down for me. I'm not a big peppermint fan.
How about Whoppers? You know, those like little chocolate milk balls. I like them, but they're very controversial. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah, if it's the only option I had, I'd give it a thumbs up.
Candy corn.
Definitely. I actually had this discussion the other day with some guys. It's like only Halloween once or twice, thumbs up. Rest of the year, thumbs down.
All right, two final candies here. First up, lemon heads.
That's a thumbs down for me.
Last one, yellow starburst.
Yellow starburst. I mean, you got to eat the yellow starburst to appreciate the red and the pink. So, I mean, you got to eat the yellow and the orange. So, got to give it a thumbs up. It's not as good as the other ones, but it plays its part.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. Let's take a look back really quickly before we move on to you guys' game on Sunday against the Bills. You guys started this homestand under 500 with a very important Sunday night football game against the Lions. You guys had an incredible homestand. You guys outscored your opponents 89-24. What are you most proud of? What was the most impressive for you, given how you guys played this homestand?
Yeah, I think it's just the progression of getting better and better, offense and defense and special teams, everybody. It's got better while we were at home, and we had Arrowhead on our side, and so we have to continue that. You know, we played some good football teams, and we've gotten better as the season's gone on, but we're going to have a nice stretch of games starting off with Buffalo, and it's going to be a tough environment. So we got to continue to get better and try to find a way to win this game in a tough environment.
One thing that you told me a couple of weeks ago when we were having a conversation was about the wide receiver room and how much guys really like each other. I've been really paying attention to that, and you can just get a sense of it, man. Guys really like playing for each other. Guys like seeing other guys have success. It feels like the camaraderie is very high right now amongst the team. It feels like the chemistry and confidence is also very high amongst the team as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it speaks to just the culture that we've kind of built here, and guys like each other, and they want to go out there and win, and they want everybody to succeed. And so that's not going to happen every single game that everybody's going to get all the catches or all the yards or whatever it is. But I think if you just play your part and you get yourself open whenever you get the opportunities, the football's going to come your way, and then you'll be able to go out there and make an impact in the game.
You can't really call anything automatic, but it feels like Kareem Hunt on third and short or fourth and short, it's become almost as automatic as anything in the league right now.
Yeah, no, he's doing a great job, man. I mean, he does a great job of finding the soft spots in the run and getting through there and getting the yards. You know, that's not an easy thing to do, and I think it's a weapon that we have is having him in those situations. And the offensive line's doing a great job giving him space to run with.
I also feel like that's just changed some of the philosophy amongst the team. One thing we were talking about on the show yesterday was, you know, you guys had fourth and one from your side of the field. I feel like in years past, you guys potentially punt in that situation. It didn't feel like there was any hesitation. It felt like everybody had a lot of confidence in that offensive line and also Kareem to pick up the 1 or 2 yards.
100%. And I said this after the game. I mean, it's confidence in Kareem in the offensive line, and it's also confidence in our defense that they're going to get stops if it doesn't work out. And so I think it speaks to the confidence of the entire team and the coaches have in us that we're going to go out there and make it happen. And if the slight chance that we don't, the defense is going to get the stop, get the ball right back to us.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. I got to ask you about Travis. He ties the record. Very special moment at Arrowhead. How cool is it to see him have that moment? And you talk about the hard work that guys put in. This is the guy that's been doing it for a decade now.
100%, man. I mean, he comes to work every single day with the right attitude. And one of the main leaders, if not the leader of this football team. And he's a guy that practices harder than anybody. Has a smile on his face, keeping guys motivated and ready to go. And so he's deserving of having these type of records broken, and that comes with the work that he puts in every single day.
Let's move ahead to Sunday's matchup against the Buffalo Bills. This is the 10th time that you guys will have played the Bills. It just feels like every year this game always means a whole lot. It's always really important, and it usually feels like it's around this time in the calendar.
Yeah, it is. It's always like late October, early November when we play, and it's kind of the season's rolling, and you know where everybody's kind of at in the standings and everything like that. And so We know it's going to take our best effort. I think that's what I've learned about every single matchup that we have, is it always comes down to the end, and it's two great football teams going up against each other, and it's going to be one play here or there. It's going to change the outcome. And so it's just about making those plays, staying motivated, staying up to the task, and going out there and playing your best football at the right time and making those big plays in the big moments.
I'm sure you've heard this comparison a million times, but, you know, you and I are from the same era of watching football. You know, every year you circled Brady against Manning, and you knew whether it was Patriots Colts or Patriots Broncos, you knew how important that matchup was going to be. How cool is it to kind of grow up watching that rivalry and now essentially be in the middle of your own version of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool just being able to be in these big games and playing against the best of the best at quarterback and at teams. And so, I mean, it speaks to the work that both organizations have put in every single year to be in these big games year after year. And I think it just it speaks to the people that are in each building. So it's been a lot of fun, man. I mean, go up and playing these big football games against these top-tier quarterbacks, and having a friendship with Josh as well. It's cool to be able to go up there and know that he's going to play his best football in the big moments, and I plan on trying to do the same.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. You know, what's the relationship like between you and Josh? Because it appears you guys are very friendly, but there's also a rivalry there. You want to beat him, he wants to beat you. What's the relationship like? What's the rivalry like between you and Josh Allen?
Yeah, I mean, I think off the field, I mean, I respect the way he plays the game and the way he handles himself. And so I think off the field, we kind of have similarities as far as being interested in golf and being interested in just being around our family and competing and just being good people. And so I think that kind of tends itself to have a friendship as far as golf and stuff like that. But I mean, I know just like me, he's as competitive as ever. So when we get on the football field, it's all about going out there and finding a way to win for the football team. And so it's definitely a friendship that on game days is not a lot of talking. It's about going out there and competing.
We've talked about this before. You know, you're a part of a big three with you, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson. It feels like you guys push each other. You got a couple of MVPs. Lamar has a couple of MVPs. Josh Allen has an MVP. It feels like you guys really push each other to bring the best out of one another.
Yeah, I think that's just the quarterback position these days. I mean, there's so many great quarterbacks. I mean, you see it every Sunday of all the guys that are around the league making plays happen. And you want to push yourself to be even better. And you know if you don't, you're going to get passed up by these other guys. And it takes your best effort every single week. And so, I mean, Josh and Lamar have kind of been those guys that have pushed me every step of the way, being here the longest kind of with me. But at the same time, man, these young guys are coming hungry as ever. So it's going to take all of us to keep playing our best football to try to stay on top.
I think a lot of people, if you ask them, you know, what's their memory from this rivalry, a lot of people would say the 13-second game at Arrowhead. When I think of this rivalry, I think of when you guys went on the road in the playoffs a couple of years ago. Up to that point, you hadn't played a road playoff game. There were those conversations of what is this team going to look like. You guys go on the road and you get the tough win, and then it's that image of you running off the field, and fans are just throwing snowballs at you.
Yeah, no, the fan bases are passionate for sure. I think it's for me, I like that one more just because we won the Super Bowl that year in the 13-second game. We lose the next game. So I think it's been a lot of great games. And even the games that we've lost have come down to the very end. And I think it's a great rivalry. And we just go out there and know, like I said, it's take our best football. And you're going to have memories after the games. And hopefully they're good ones.
You just mentioned it. Where would you kind of rank the fan? I don't know if animosity is the correct term, but certainly you're not very popular there for understandable reasons. Where does it kind of rank with some of the other visiting stadiums you go into?
No, it's up there. They definitely don't like me or the Kansas City Chiefs. But, I mean, I love it. I mean, I love that, like, they're that passionate about their fans, their team, and that's what you want in sports, man. And you want to keep it – you want to keep it a hostile, but at the same time safe. But at the same time, I mean, you want it to be a great environment and a great atmosphere. And you know, going up to Buffalo, you're going to get a great one. Now it's about going out there and kind of bonding together with your teammates and going out there and trying to find a way to win.
Last two things here. Kansas City, they love their tailgating. I don't know if anybody loves tailgating more than Buffalo. You got to be on a different level to try to pile drive somebody through a table.
Yeah, I've never tried to do it, and I don't plan on it, but it looks like it's fun for those guys. So, I mean, they can keep doing it. It's part of their tradition.
And last thing here, you were a baseball guy. We had an 18-inning baseball game. What's the longest baseball game you've been in?
Man, I couldn't even tell you, but 18's a lot of innings. I try to stay up after the game. You know, I got my adrenaline pumping, and I get after the game. It's the ninth inning, and I turn it on, and I'm watching it kind of in the locker room, and then all of a sudden I go home, and it's the 11th inning, and I stayed up to – I was mad. I stayed up to like 1 something in the morning to the 17th inning and just passed out, fell asleep. And, of course, Freddie Freeman hits a walk-off in the 18th. So I missed the walk-off, even though I tried to stay up for it. But it's been a great series, 2-2, and they're still in L.A., and then they'll have to go back to Toronto. It's been a great series to watch.
That is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, joining us on the show today as we get you ready for one of the most anticipated games of the regular season, the Chiefs and the Bills. Patrick, great luck, man. We'll catch up with you after the bye week.
Yeah, appreciate you.
That was Patrick Mahomes talking with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City, the weekly conversation with the Chiefs quarterback that we're able to play for you. Again, the Chiefs and the Bills this Sunday, huge game. That could be a preview of the AFC Championship, 3:25 at kickoff right here on KMOX. We will take another break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the program. You are locked in to a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at for just a couple more minutes here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX, wrapping things up for the night. We do have a short show tomorrow. We're going to be done early for Thursday night football. The Thursday night matchup coming up tomorrow evening is going to be the Baltimore Ravens in Miami to take on the Dolphins. Wanted to mention this very quickly. We had Chaim Bloom on this past Sunday, as he is always on Sports on a Sunday morning. He'll be back on with Tom coming up this Sunday, but it gained a little bit of traction from a kind of from a news standpoint about what he had to say about the timeline for Lars Nootbaar returning from the injury. He had the surgery to alleviate some of the pain in his heels. Well, advancing that story, Derek Gould wrote about it in the Post-Dispatch and at STL Today, and he talked to Nootbaar, and I would encourage you to read the story. But just sort of an update on where this whole thing is at. I thought it was interesting. Nootbaar was a little bit surprised by the fact that he needed surgery after he went to New York to meet with a doctor. And also, this is where it's a little bit frustrating because it really was not talked about at all that Nootbaar was dealing with pain in his feet, pain in his heels. And Nootbaar told Derek Gould that he had been dealing with this for a while and didn't really know what it was, but it was impacting his ability to do things. So from an athletic standpoint, I think we all know it all starts in the lower body and it starts in the feet. So if you've got pain in your feet, if your feet are not allowing you to do things, that's going to transfer to your entire body. I'm not going to sit here and I was very disappointed with Lars Nootbaar's performance this year. Could have it been impacted by this pain in the feet all year long or through the second half of the season? However long, yeah, it could have been. Could have it not been? Could have this just kind of been who Nootbaar is? Like, I want to make it clear, I'm not sitting here making an excuse for him. I'm not sitting here and saying this is why the season went the way that it went. But I do think we need to present it as a possibility. Because as much people don't like to hear about the StatCast numbers and all those sort of things, Nootbaar still does some things, has some abilities where if he ever puts it all together, he can be a big-time dynamic baseball player. And where we have discussed the idea of trading Lars Nootbaar, and before this surgery and everything, I honestly thought that Nootbaar was likely to get moved. Now I don't think he is. I think he's likely with the team when spring training gets underway and when the season gets started. But if, it's a big if, and he's dealt with so many different injuries. There's no guarantee on anything. But if it was the foot issue, the heels, that really impacted him from a negative standpoint this year, and some of those advanced numbers, some of those StatCast numbers that we talk about, they actually fell back a little bit this year, if that could be attributed to the feet, it's a reason to have at least a sliver of hope that things could look better for Nootbaar moving forward. Because, again, based off what Nootbaar said to Derek Gould, and I encourage you to read it in the Post-Dispatch and at stltoday.com, this is something that he's been dealing with for a while, been working with trainers, and then finally he went and saw a doctor, and that's when they had the surgery. He's evidently, rehab's going well. He's using crutches to walk right now, but it sounds like things are going well for him, and all we can do is sit back and wait and see how this might impact him moving forward. That's it for the show. This is a fun show tonight. Thank you so much for being tuned in. Again, short show tomorrow. We'll do Rush Hour Sports during the 5 o'clock hour, and then I'll have you for a half hour after that, leading into Thursday Night Football. Have a great rest of your Wednesday night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. This has been a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.